Welcome to season 2 of the Santam Ensure Your Future Money Bootcamp with me, Mapalo Maku.
And me, Maya Fisher French. And now, thanks to your incredible feedback from season 1, we're excited to continue our money conversations. And we're going to invite you to use this journey and these discussions both as motivation and information to kickstart your own personal financial transformation.
This season, we'll tackle a variety of essential topics like navigating taxes,
smart ways to allocate your money on payday, understanding the pros and cons, let's be honest, of debt review, ensuring that you can retire before the age of 80, and we're even going to be looking at how your marriage contract impacts your financial health.
And just a quick disclaimer, Maya and I are not financial advisors, but what we will be doing is bringing in experts in every one of those fields that Maya has just mentioned.
We just want to give you the knowledge and equip you with basically the information to know the right questions to be asking when you're engaging with the financial industry. But Mapalo, as always, this is not about money. It's about emotions. Okay, that's actually where it all starts. And I know that you and I, over the years of working with people, you especially as a financial coach, we have come across over and over how our money, how our emotions can influence and sabotage our money mindset.
I think this is a good place to start talking about money and emotions, because once you start getting into the numbers and the rands and the cents, people always kind of get lost. But when you go back to how do you think about money? Why is it that you do the things you do around money? And it all stems from how we grew up, isn't it, Maya?
Absolutely. And you know that psychologists have actually identified something called financial trauma. So it's a very real thing. Mapalo, you know, when we work with people, we see this often because we get them to do a money questionnaire. We get them to ask them a little bit about their money history and growing up. And if you've grown up with poverty or watching parents in extreme financial stress or, you know, we can't afford it, money scarcity, you know, or also having less than those around you growing up, these can all create really big financial traumas.
We often talk about the financial trauma of having money. And I want to just put in a little bit of spice into the podcast today around those people who grow up having a little bit of money and have shame around having money because they are growing up with people perhaps who have less than them. So I want to put that into the twist today for sure. But talking about financial trauma, I'll start. So one of the things that we require as part of the money bootcamp is that people fill out a money questionnaire. So to dig a little deeper around how they grew up, the one thing I see quite often is that people do not want to do that questionnaire or even go to the length of pulling out their bank statements or pulling out all the other financial statements that they have. What do you think that is?
So that actually ties a lot into trauma. So for a lot of people, refusing to check their bank statements or procrastination is actually a sign of financial trauma. So when you go and ask someone like that and you say, why do you, and I had it last year, and one of our candidates last year, she arrived at my first meeting with our one-on-one meeting, and she was supposed to have filled in all these documents. And she just said to me, Maya, I'm paralyzed by fear. I cannot do this. And that is a very normal response for somebody who's had a major financial trauma in their lives. If you've grown up in a household where people spoke about money, where money was treated, was easy to access, you don't carry that trauma. In fact, it can be quite exciting for you to get to grips with your money. You see money as a friend. You see finances as something you're comfortable with. But if you haven't had that experience and money's trauma, then of course, this is a little bit like, you know, going back to your childhood, it can trigger a lot of emotions for you. So not an unusual response.
Yeah. And I mean, with one of the examples, one of the guys who's part of this year's Money Bootcamp, he had a student debt, but because he thought, goodness, I haven't looked at this thing for the past 2-3 years, he was afraid to just even email it to me. That's how incredible and that's how fearful he was around looking at his finances.
And I think also the other thing is, one of the things that we require people to do is to write down all their debt.
Yeah.
And there's a big shock factor for many people because they didn't want to look at it. But what I find, and I think this is very important, what I find is once, yes, it's a shock factor, but once we start the conversation, once we say, okay, how can we deal with this? There is an empowerment that comes with it. Mm-hmm. And I think that is one of the great ways to overcome financial trauma is not to stick your head in the sand, but to actually start saying, how can I overcome this? And sadly, it does often require a partner. Somebody like ourselves, obviously we're helping, we're working with people, but you could even find a friend or a financial advisor or planner who can sort of start helping you through this. Because I do think, Maplo, it's very hard to do on your own.
It is very hard. But for me, I want to say you cannot solve for what you don't know, right? If you are in this spiral, in this anxiety, quite often, just say, you know what? I don't want to live like this. Mm. What is it that I need to do? So we are telling you right now, go take your bank statement, perhaps 3 months, go take your all the debts that you have, print out the statements, your payslip, all of those documents, print them out and say, all right, today I'm going to start this thing. Because sometimes it's not quite easy talking to a friend. Perhaps you're in a similar situation. So it is the blind leading the blind. But if you definitely can find someone, 100%. But also just challenge yourself and say, I'm not going to finish 2025 with the same mentality, with the same raw emotions and anxiety around money.
And I think it is worth doing. You know, the money questionnaire is on the site and you can go and do it. And I think one of the things that I found very useful is the reflections that people have afterwards. And it's like, ah, that's why I feel the way I do. I didn't realize that. Mm. In fact, one of our candidates this year, one of the things we picked up was that he was told by his mother that he couldn't go and study because he had to start working immediately and support the family. So immediately he was being programmed that his responsibility was to support all of his family members. And that isn't always healthy either. So you can also, when you start writing this down, you'll say, oh, there's this messaging that I've had that may be feeding into this pattern and feeding into the current situation I'm in. So I think that question is very useful. Mm-hmm. And also where I find it very useful is when it starts a conversation between partners. If you're married or you're living with somebody, their money journey and their money experiences and how they experience money is also very revealing.
Very revealing, Maya. And I think that can even help couples later on if they just push on through past the discomfort, realize that, yes, we're actually not fighting one another. We are fighting the fact that we're not aware of our traumas. And you can say, all right, now that we know this, what do we want to achieve as a couple? And now you start working together towards that specific goal and not fighting each other about money. I will tell you something, Mike. You know, as you were talking, I remember growing up myself. And I just remember this distinct feeling saying, I will never be broke. And that was my money vow to myself. And I wasn't aware. And later, I realized that, oh my goodness, because of my own experiences, I made a money vow. And for me, the question is, what is your money vow? Because of the messagings that you got, what is that money vow? For me, it was, I will never be broke. I will never not have money. What is your money vow today?
And I think, I must say, I'd have to think about I think my money vow was always being financially independent of my husband.
Yes.
Because of my upbringing, right? So I had the experience of my father dying and leaving us financially destitute. We didn't know. My mother didn't know. She didn't know the household finances. And I swore that would never, ever be me. And I've always had my own investments. In fact, in our family, I look after all the money, right? Yeah. I make sure there's always investments. So somewhere along the line. And I think it's also useful to look at that. You know, we've spoken about the procrastination, maybe refusing to check bank accounts, but another part of a financial trauma is excessive behavior. Mm. So you may have somebody who's had this financial trauma that is now a compulsive saver. Like, I'll never be broke, right? You can go into the complete fear of that, where you don't spend money. You're terrified of spending money and you judge anyone who spends money. And I always, my mom, I hope she doesn't listen to this, but I've always blamed her for having a war mentality. My mom was born during the war, the Second World War. And that generation, we really grew up with, you've got to save everything. And sometimes that can be a little bit frustrating because she refuses to put the heater on in the middle of winter, even though she's got the money, you know, that kind of part of it. But then...
How does one solve for that? So let's say you're a compulsive saver and anyone spending just frustrates you and you think that they're wasting. What would be the solution? Because obviously, at the end of the day, you still want to enjoy your life. You want to live within reason, right? What kind of tips can you give that type of person?
So I sat with my mom. I've actually was with her recently. And she was freezing cold. And I said, Mom, if we put the heating on, okay, so let's work out in a year, how many days would you really need this heating on? Okay, yes. So maybe it's 30 days, all right? If I took that and I divided it by 365 days of the year, it really works out to a small amount every single day, right? Mm. So I try to take away that because she's so scared of that heating bill coming in, this lump sum that she's going to have to pay. And I said, but what if you look at it as an annual expense?
Yes.
You know, so I really had to talk her through it. And then she'd bought a new couch and I said, you're prepared to spend on that, but you're not prepared to spend on the heating. So a lot of it was just sitting and having that conversation. Mm. And I said, Mom, you don't have many years left on this planet. Please be warm. I do think we need to sometimes go back and say, well, let's look at this in a different way. Yeah. How do we look at this and saying, is this depriving ourselves? Maybe we need to look at it in a different context. I saw such a great Instagram post the other day. They said, 1 minute we're complaining about the price of eggs and the next day we're planning an overseas holiday. How true is that? How true is that?
Yeah. Yes.
So we also sometimes worry about the little stuff and that's some sort of anxiety around that, but then we go off and splurge. And that's the other extreme behavior where we go and we scrimp and save on one level, but then we just break through.
But
and
you know what? That makes me think of Maya choosing a marital contract where people agonize about, oh my goodness, what wedding dress am I going to wear? Where's the venue? Where's all of these things? All this elaborate
500,000 rand on the wedding venue.
500,000 bucks gone. But to say, all right, let us sit down and decide, are we going to get married in community of property, out of community of property, with or without the accrual system? And that takes a much shorter time to make that decision versus the wedding plan that takes months.
And I mean, I think that we've talked about that a lot. And I think in one of our later episodes, we're going to talk about marriage contracts. We've got such a brilliant divorce attorney joining us who's going to look at all of that for us. And as well as traditional marriage, you know, when you've paid Lobola, are you married? What does that mean? So definitely something we want to unpack. And I hope that people listening now are going to listen on for that one as well. And if you are thinking about getting married, start putting money away for the lawyer. but, we spoke about the extremes as well, where it's like my mom, perhaps, you know, this is the big savers. But also, and this is what we see quite often, and I've got quite a few cases of that at the moment, of people who spend excessively making up for past scarcity. Mm. And that's very common. And I think we see that a lot of people getting into deep amounts of debt because it's kind of like I'm making up for that, or it's actually an emotional reaction to financial trauma growing up.
And for me, Maya, I have an example. This lady said, you know what? I've always been prudent. Right, I've always tried to save money, but as soon as she is around her friends, as soon as she sees her peers, that smart money moves, they go flying out the window. And this lady stays in PE and, you know, she's managing her money well. She has this credit card and, you know, normally the limit is much higher than you actually need, right?
Always.
Uh-huh. And she comes down to Joburg, spends the weekend there for a wedding. Then come Sunday, they are going out for lunch. And she just sees all this, you know, people who are dressed extravagantly. And she thinks to herself, you know, I also need to show them that just because I stay in the Eastern Cape doesn't mean I don't have money. She whips out her credit card, goes to Diamond Walk, as they call it. I've never been there. In Sandton, and buys a Louis Vuitton bag. A bag that she says, you know, she used a couple of times, but it wore off as immediately as she made that purchase.
So I was listening to, there's an economist who's written a book about the history of money. And I was listening to him speak and he said something that was so profound. He said, we buy stuff because other people buy stuff.
Yeah.
Exactly right. So you go to a lunch with your friends, they've all got a Louis Vuitton bag. Now you need one.
Yeah, probably fake, who knows?
Yeah. But it doesn't matter. But the point is that you didn't even know you needed one. I've shared this with you before. Yeah. I go to a friend's house, she's renovating her house. I come home to my perfectly fine house and think I need to start renovating my house, right? So other people's behavior often triggers our spending behavior. And I think when, and it's not about saying we shouldn't spend money. Maplo and I are not here to tell you not to spend money. Yes. We're just saying, understand the psychological drivers of these things. And especially when it comes to retail therapy, because oh my goodness, we do love to spend, you know, because we're feeling down or because we're feeling happy, because our friends have. Mm. We've got lots of reasons to spend. I just don't think we have very many reasons to save, Maplo.
I know for sure. And I've said this before, when I'm on holiday, I'm like a completely different person than when I, under normal circumstances, you know, when I'm thinking about my retirement, when I'm thinking about my investments for the future. On holiday, it's like a completely different beast comes out. But so you can see that we do balance here. We do balance.
You do all your spending on holiday. But I, there's something I wanted to just talk about a little bit about retail therapy, since we're on that topic. So some of the reasons we'll, you know, we reward spend, right? Because we're celebrating something and it's fantastic. You know, I've just got this, so I'm going to go and spend money. But you can also do it for the opposite reason, is I'm feeling so sad, so let me go and spend money. But one of the big things with retail therapy is literally it is dopamine. So it releases, when we go shopping and we buy something new, it releases dopamine in our brains, which is actually the same chemical that cocaine stimulates, right? So it can become an addiction. Now, what the scientists have realized, you know, they stick electrodes on your head and then they make you do things, is that the dopamine high actually comes with the anticipation. Not the purchase itself, the anticipation of the purchase. So you're going, the idea of buying the Louis Vuitton bag is actually greater than once you have it, your dopamine levels immediately start dropping. So what do you need to do? You need to go and buy another one and another one and another
one. To keep on getting that high.
To keep getting the high. And I can't remember if I shared this in our last season, but in one of my money makeover candidates when I was working with City Press, she didn't even realize she had done this. She didn't know about the science behind it, but she'd worked out. She's a big online shopper. Okay. She loves online shopping. But because she was now on a budget, what she'd do is she'd put it in her basket and she'd look at it and love it and think about it and all the rest, but she wouldn't check out. And then 3 days later, she'd come back and she'd look at it again. And by now, she's like, oh, yeah, no, actually, it's not that nice. And she'd delete it from her basket and put something else in. So she just kept that anticipation and that kind of dopamine going without actually spending money. And I have to tell you, I think it was one of the most sensible ideas. And, you know, it's quite a clever idea.
It is, Maya. You know, I realized that I've done that. There's a very popular website that people buy clothes. I keep on just adding, but I've never bought anything from that, ever. But every single time I see the ads, either when I'm on social media, because that's when they pop up, I go and add. I'm like, oh my goodness, this looks amazing. Then obviously other stuff pop up and I'm just forever adding. And I was laughing with my husband the other day. I said, you know, if you love me, just clear that cart for me. But I've never cleared it myself. On the other hand, Maya, literally right now, I'm dealing with one of the mentees who loves shopping. She says, you know what, I'm bored. It's around 10 p.m. I'm on my phone and I'll just get stuff from Takealot. I'll get stuff from this website. I'll get stuff from there. And I said, okay, I'm not saying that you shouldn't spend, right? That's not the point of this. But let me see over the past 3 months how much you've spent on online shopping. And we calculated it. She was shocked. She was just like, please stop. Let's not look any further. Then from there, I said, can you commit to putting away half of this money? Just half. I'm not saying the entire thing, just half. You can continue doing whatever else you want, but just half of it. And she says that that is so empowering for her. So we're not saying entirely change who you are and the things that do make you happy, but look at your overall financial life and say, what is it that I want to achieve at the end of the day?
And I mean, it's interesting that you mentioned boredom. Because that is a big part of what makes us spend money as well. We're bored. And when we're bored, we want novelty, we want fun, we want something. And having something new, again, remember the whole dopamine thing, remember we get an emotional kick out of it, is actually one of our reasons. So perhaps if you're starting to again, just saying, why do I feel like shopping? Oh, maybe I'm bored. So am I feeling a little bit very happy and I'm shopping or very sad, or am I bored? What is the emotion that is driving it? And I think once you acknowledge the emotion, it may shift your need for spending.
Yeah.
So I think
but
it's
I
an
think
important
also,
one.
Maya, what you are saying is you really have to get acquainted with yourself, right? You have to get to know yourself enough to realize when that emotion is happening, because it happens so quickly between you being bored, picking up your phone, ding, 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 done, right? So I think even before all the personal finance stuff, we really have to make an effort into knowing ourselves.
Absolutely. And I think that's why we're doing this, why we started off with money and emotions, because I think that's a really important topic. Maplo and I see this all the time. We are, when people come to us, they are have high levels of anxiety. They have shame. They have secrets from their partners. Mm. I mean, that's another very big one. Many people don't want to go and talk about their debt with their partners. But the best way through this is to talk about it, to deal with it, even if you can start trying to have these conversations with your friends, your circle of friends. Mm. Because I can assure you, Mapalo, everybody else in that circle of friends is probably feeling the same way. And, you know, once I open those conversations with my own friends, I'm very open, yeah. By the way. I will tell you immediately when I can't afford something.
A little too open sometimes.
Yes, I will tell you if I can't afford something. I will tell you how I'm feeling about it. Yeah. And it allows those conversations. So maybe one thing we can do is all be a little bit more honest in our conversations. So we're not trying to keep up with somebody, mm-hmm. but we're also not trying to put pressure on other people by pretending that we're okay.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And I think it is definitely hard, Maya, in a circle where you're not used to talk about money, right? But be the game changer. Be the first one to start saying, hey, you know, I'm listening to this podcast. They are talking about this. What do you think are your money traumas? You know, I went and downloaded the money questionnaire on the website, and this are sort of the results. Can I share it with you? Be the person who starts hard conversations around the table. Mm. And trust me, you will be better off in the long run by having the conversations now, because they are going to catch up with you. Mm. One thing about money, and one thing I know, it will catch up with you if you don't address it.
And especially if you're entering into a relationship.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. So if you are getting involved with someone and that person's not prepared to have those conversations with you, I would call that a big red flag.
Yeah.
So that I would definitely. So, well, thank you to you guys for joining us again for season 2. And as Mapalo said, we're going to be covering a lot of topics over the next, I don't know, a couple of months. Yeah. But we love hearing from you. So please put your comments in and make sure you go and download that money questionnaire and give us the feedback.
Yeah, and we'll leave the link to where you can download this, all the questionnaires that we have there.